All righty. Hello, everyone, and a very happy Wednesday. And Anne, as usual, that was a brilliant sharing. What makes the sharing so brilliant is the raw honesty. Yeah. And the clarity. The clarity that's looking. You know, it's the two put together. So keep doing what you're doing. I have a few announcements to make. First of all, this is the last time that I will teach Guiding Light in this time slot. Kathy Smith is going to be moving into this time slot with her program, that is usually on Sundays. Let's see, her program is called No Fluff, right? No Fluff. And currently she's reading from Experience Your Perfect Soul. She's going to be moving into this time slot. So it will be Prayer Circle, then Anne, then Kathy Smith, then Jacqueline Eckert. I am going to move Guiding Light to Sunday nights. What I'm going to do is let go of Seven Steps for now. It doesn't mean I won't come back to Seven Steps, but I'm going to let go of it for now. I will be doing Guiding Light in the Seven Steps time frame. So that means that Guiding Light, starting on April 1st, which is also Easter, so it's April Fool's Day and Easter, and the first time that I'll teach Guiding Light on Sunday night, so that should be pretty easy to remember. And that will be at 7 p.m. Eastern time. So today is my last Guiding Light in this time frame, and this coming Sunday night is my last Seven Steps for now. In addition to that, I have another announcement to make. I have decided to consolidate ReginaDawnAkers.com onto Awakening Together. And I am letting go of ReginaDawnAkers.com. And I don't have a specific reason for that. This isn't coming for any particular reason, although the mind can see benefits, like I won't have to maintain two websites anymore. Now I only have one website just to maintain. But to be honest, that came afterwards. There was just this feeling. It's the same as several months ago. There was this feeling to let go of the Regina Dawn Akers page and Facebook, as well as Ask Regina, and I did. It's that same feeling. And if I was really to put it into words, it's not words everybody would love, but I feel like I'm preparing to die. You know, and when someone's preparing to die, they start kind of wrapping everything up so that it's easier for the family, right? And it'll be easier for the family, when all of these things are either closed down or all in one location and can be easier managed. You know, Regina does so many things that only Regina knows about and only Regina knows how. And I feel like that's being consolidated, so that I can disappear, to put it bluntly. That's really the feeling. So the next move that is happening is ReginaDawnAkers.com will, in the very near future, be closed down. And everything that's on ReginaDawnAkers.com that has any real value at all is being moved to Awakening Together. And it's very easy to check that out if you want to. You just go to Awakening Together. Click on the Audios and Videos menu, and right directly underneath Audios and Videos, you'll see Regina Dawn Akers. And if you are on a PC, if you just point at Regina Dawn Akers, a side menu will fly out, and you're going to find the Guiding Light, the Seven Steps to Awakening, the NTI teachings, the Inner Ramana teachings, the classics, everything that was there on ReginaDawnAkers.com is there. I Am That has been moved there. It was under Sanctuary Highlights. So everything is in one nice, neat, easy-to-find place on Awakening Together, awakening-together.com. Sorry, .org. .com will get you there, too, though. awakening-together.org, right directly underneath the Audios and Videos menu. And I think that's it for my announcements. And so what I'm going to do is play a song that came to me because today's tip was very much focused on the code And this song isn't really about rising in code, rising up into the higher vibrations, but it's the song that came to my mind when I was, you know, when that idea of rising up to higher vibrations was present. I could just see this. I'm wondering if any of y'all can guess what song it is. It's an oldie, but a goodie. It's from the Fifth Dimension is the name of the band. For those of you who are young, you may not remember them, but I think we're probably all pretty old here. The name of the song is Up, Up and Away, and My Beautiful Balloon. Here we go. And away in my beautiful balloon. And their clothes are so funny. I know they were the height of cool at the time. But now the clothes are just so funny. You know, it's true, if we look back in the 60s and the 70s, you know, when we thought we were so dang cool, we just look funny. And even the 80s really are starting to look funny now. Like, oh my goodness, all that big hair and everything. But I'm sure someday we're going to look back on today, which feels quite normal, and realize that, once again, it looked pretty funny. So I am here then for the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. And I am near the end of the section called Experience. And the last time I was here, which was 2 weeks ago, we looked at what is pure mind and what is impure mind. And the answer that we received was really from the point of view of the absolute. Impure mind really being consciousness. And that's kind of funny, because here we are trying to rise up in our balloon, up, up and away to pure consciousness. Like, that's the first goal, right? True perception. Pure consciousness. We're trying to raise up to that. And from the absolute's point of view, that's impure mind, you know, which is why it's important for us to remember that even when we awaken, or the, you know, rise up in vibration to that pure consciousness, there's still an awakening to go. And And, you know, this has always been taught very clearly through the Hindu scriptures. You know, the Hindu scriptures, again, talks about vibrational levels. They talk about the tamasic level, which is the lower vibration, the rajasic level, which is higher, but obviously still a low vibration, and then the sattvic level, which is the highest vibration. But the teaching is that even the sattvic level is not awakened, right? If you study the Bhagavad Gita with Krishna, which is, you know, thousands of years old, right? That teaching is very, very clear in the Bhagavad Gita that the sattvic is the highest level that you reach in this world, that it is not yet awakened. So it's as if we rise up in vibration. In fact, Krishna did encourage Arjuna to rise up in vibration. We rise up in vibration. We reach that highest vibration in the world, the purest that we can be in the world, the purest way of seeing, the purest way of being. And yet, there's an awakening that still needs to occur, that is awakening from the dream or from the vibrational levels entirely. And so when Ramana Maharshi was answering us 2 weeks ago, when the question was, what is pure mind and what is impure mind, he was answering from having awakened from vibrational levels entirely, so that even sattvic, or the highest vibration, or true perception, or the real world, whatever words you want to use to point to that, were qualified within impure mind, impure being not true. Impure did not mean evil, because, of course, the sattvic is, you know, typically what people would call very, very good, right? Very humble, very giving, very present, right? But Ramana Maharshi called it impure because it wasn't the absolute. Only the absolute is pure truth. Anything less than the absolute is not pure. And so that was referred to as impure mind. And that's kind of a review of what we looked at a couple of weeks ago. So now what we'll do is go to question number 9. I have 2 questions left in experience. It'd be nice. It'd be just fun to get through them both today. We'll see if we do. But that way we end at the end of a section. That's always nice and neat. But maybe we won't. We'll see what happens. So number 9. Question number 9. Is it possible to overcome, even while the body exists, the karma which is said to last till the end of the body? What a great question. Oh my God. I love that question. I'll read the question again, then we'll see what Ramana says about it. I can guess what Ramana is going to say about it, but we'll let him answer for himself. Is it possible to overcome, even while the body exists, the karma which is said to last till the end of the body? Ramana Maharshi's answer: yes, if the agent or the doer upon whom the karma depends, namely the ego, which has come into existence between the body and the self, merges in its source and loses its form, will the karma which depends upon it alone survive? Therefore, when there is no I, there is no karma. So let me just put this into Regina Don Acres' language, which is the language of the code. As we have seen, you know, with our song, Up, Up and Away, right, you can rise up in vibration. As you rise up in vibration, however, you are still within the code. The code and karma are synonymous. In fact, the code, karma, and the script of A Course in Miracles are synonymous. And one of the primary ways that we experience the code, although people tend to look at, you know, quote, what happens to me as karma or script, that isn't really the primary way that we experience it. The primary way that most humans experience the code is as thought. Emotions tend to be secondary for most humans. But for some humans, emotions are the primary way the code is experienced, and thought is secondary. I'm not exactly sure where the dividing line is. We'll say 70% of humans experience thought as primary, and 30% experience emotions as primary. But that's how we experience the code primarily. You know, it's more what feels internal. If you think of yourself as a body, it's more what feels internal to the body rather than external to the body, which is what we perceive as things, right, outside of us. So let's just pause for a moment and ask, what is it that experiences thought or emotion and believes thought or emotion? Right? What is it that experiences thought or emotion and believes thought or emotion? And the answer is the person, which is also the ego, the I, the subject, right? That's why we say my thoughts, my emotions. Who's the one claiming that ownership? Right? So as long as I, a seemingly subject, exist, then I am affected by karma or the code. Now, as we've learned on our own, that doesn't mean that it has to be the lower levels of karma or the code, right? Because the code or karma is multi-layered, and you can rise up. Again, this is something that the Hindus have taught for a long time. The tamasic code is the lower level, the rajasic code is the middle level, and the sattvic code is the higher level, right? So you're not trapped in a particular level of code, which is how some people interpret karma, which is unfortunate. You know, so some people, especially, you know, in India, believe if you are born, even though they don't really, quote, have the different classes anymore, you're still, even it's kind of informally there. So if you're born as like an untouchable, as the scum of India, that's it. That's it for this whole lifetime. That was your karma, they say. You cannot rise above that. And this is something the Indian government has been attempting to change with new laws. The Indian government is attempting to change this, that you can, what is it called? It's not class. Can somebody remind me? I'm having one of those senior moments where I can't think of the word. But you, caste. Thank you very much. You can rise above your caste. You can go to college. You can get a job that used to be perceived as outside of your caste, right? And the Indian government has laws where they're trying to help people get out of that thinking that you're stuck in the caste you were born into. You're stuck with the limitations you were born into. Because, of course, that isn't helpful to India, right? So the government is trying to help people change that way of thinking. But that way of thinking is a misperception. Because Hindu teaching has always included the ability to rise in vibration. You're not stuck at the vibrational level that you're born with. You have the ability to rise out of tamasic into rajasic and out of rajasic into sattvic. And again, Krishna encouraged Arjuna to do just that. Arjuna was probably born at the rajasic level, and so he would have risen to the sattvic level. But even at the sattvic level, there's an I. Even at the sattvic level, there's a me, there's a subject, right? There's a sense of self-existence. very different sense of self-existence than at the tamasic level, and even a very different sense of self-existence than at the rajasic level, but there is still a sense of self-existence. So, at the highest level of the code, or at the highest level of karma or the script, you are actually still affected by the script. It's just, you know, an easier script, right? Much easier script at the sattvic level than at the tamasic level. You know, sometimes on the news I see people who are very, very clearly at the tamasic level. And there was a woman today on the news who somebody was stealing from her car, and she was pregnant. And they're stealing from her car, and they start driving off. This was like in a grocery store parking lot or something. They start driving off, and she runs out, you know, definitely pregnant. I mean, probably 7 months pregnant. Pretty good-sized belly in front of her. And jumps in front of this getaway car trying to stop it so that she can get her purse. That's tamasic type of thinking. Fortunately, she was not injured, and fortunately, the baby is not injured, and now she's suffering because her purse is gone. But you know, that's a very low level of thinking, very self-centered, right? But no one has to stay at that level of thinking. Anyone who feels to can rise. Rising often starts with what we perceive as self-improvement. You know, like people who are alcoholics go to AA. People who do not have a good education, you know, sign up for technical school or something like that. You know, people go to college. Sometimes people even go to Harvard for self-improvement, right? But at some point, once we rise up to that rajasic level through self-improvement, we realize there's still suffering here. There's still suffering. It's a different kind of suffering. You know, it's a different kind of suffering at that level. It's more the suffering of always trying to obtain, always trying to succeed, rather than the suffering that happens at the lower level of being addicted to drugs and alcohol, getting beat up by your partner, right? It's a different type of suffering, starving. It's a different type of suffering. But there's still suffering. And so that realization, that self-improvement, rising up to a higher vibration within the script still did not end suffering, that awakens something else in us where we begin to want to rise beyond the script. Beyond karma. And you see, that's where this person's question comes from. Is it possible to overcome, even while the body exists, the karma? Right? That's the question. Can I transcend the karma? Can I transcend the script? Can I transcend the code entirely? Or, you know, is the best I can do is to rise to the highest level of the code? And Ramana Maharshi says, yes. Yes, it is possible to overcome, even while the body exists, the karma. If the agent or the doer upon whom the karma depends, right? If that one ceases to be. Now, this is beyond self-improvement. The self that we tried to improve in order to rise up from tamasic to rajasic, and really to some degree often are still trying to improve as we are rising up, beginning that rise from rajasic to sattvic, right? The self that we are trying to improve, at some point we realize that the only way to transcend the vibrational karma entirely is to let go of this self. Now wait a second, let me reword that. Let go of myself, because that's what it feels like. Let go of me. And this is when we begin to shift from self-improvement to letting go of self. There's a big difference. Self-improvement forgive me for picking on somebody in the room, but she's just an excellent example. Everybody's an excellent example, but, you know, it's the one that's coming to me now. Self-improvement goes to Harvard in order to look better, feel better about myself, right? Self-improvement goes to Harvard. Letting go of self allows you to think I'm an idiot. I don't try and change how you perceive me. You see, that's the difference. That's the difference. Self-improvement goes to Harvard hoping that you will now see me as smart. Letting go of self allows you to see me any way you want to. Letting go of self. It's a completely different angle. I'm no longer trying to uphold my self-image. And it's through this process of letting go of self that the self-image, the idea of me, who I think I am, dies, fades. Actually, Ramana Maharshi uses the word merges here. It's how that begins to end. And realization of the truth of what I am can take over. And I can awaken to the truth of what I am and transcend the karma, the code, the script entirely. Now, interestingly, although Ramana Maharshi doesn't get to this level of detail in his particular answer, interestingly, the body continues to be moved by the code. You know, let's use the example of a car with a driver, right? You know, the me is the driver of the car. And when I'm, you know, at the lower vibration, I'm driving through the ghetto and thinking this is the exciting place to be. This is where it's at. And as I rise up in vibration, I'm now driving through universities and companies and trying to succeed. I think this is where it's at, right? Maybe I'm writing novels. Maybe I'm trying to be a spiritual teacher. It's all rajasic. And then as I rise up to sattvic, now I'm kind of just taking leisurely drives to the country. Whatever happens, happens. You know, if I see something that says turn this way, I turn that way. It's much easier, much easier. But I'm still driving the car. When I awaken beyond the script entirely, I'm not driving the car anymore. The car is now being moved by the universe. The car is moved by the script, but there's no driver. The driver is gone. And if the driver is gone, how can the driver be said to be affected by karma? Which is really Ramana Maharshi's question. He answers this question with a question. The question was, is it possible to overcome, even while the body exists, the karma, which is said to last till the end of the body? Notice the karma does last till the end of the body, right? The body continues to be moved by the karma. That's different than saying, you are moved by the karma. You have to see the difference between the body and you. Right? The body will continue to be moved by the karma. Even Ramana Maharshi says that in other places. Right? Is it possible to overcome, even while the body exists, the karma, which is said to last till the end of the body? And Ramana Maharshi says, yes. But then he asks a question. The question is this. If the agent, the doer, upon whom the karma depends, namely the ego, which has come into existence between the body and the self, merges in its source and loses its form, will the karma which depends upon it alone survive? Or in other words, who is there for karma to affect? Who is there for karma to affect? Therefore, when there is no I, there is no karma. When there is no I, there is no karma. And Raman Maharshi does say in other places, you know, speaking of himself as the absolute, I, and of course this is an exact quote because my mind doesn't remember words exactly, but I am not affected by karma. Right? But in other places he does say, when people ask about, you know, why do you do this and why do you do this, he says it's the body that's moved by the karma. I am not affected by karma. It's the body that's moved by the karma. You see, what's changed also is the idea I am the body. I mean, there's just no connection. It's kind of like when the questioner asks Nisargadatta Maharaj, you know, are you trying to tell me that you're not aware of having a body? And Nisargadatta responds, to the contrary, I'm quite aware that I don't have a body. To the contrary, I'm quite aware that I don't have a body, right? That's the perspective of the absolute. So the body may be moved by the karma, but that doesn't mean I'm moved by the karma. Because I'm not the body. I've awakened beyond the dream, beyond the vibrational levels, beyond the karma. If I've awakened beyond the karma, how can I be affected by the karma? When you awaken from your nighttime dreams, are you affected by the nighttime dream? Of course not. And it's the same. All right, let's go to question number 10. I think we covered that one well. So here's question number 10. As the true self is existence and consciousness, what is the reason for describing it as different from the existent and the non-existent? The sentient and the insentient. And Ramana Maharshi responds, although the true self is real, as it comprises everything, it does not give room for questions involving duality about its reality or unreality. Therefore, it is said to be different from the real and the unreal. Similarly, even though it is consciousness, since there is nothing for it to know or to make itself known to, it is said to be different from the sentient and the insentient. So I'll just give my first response to this answer, and then we'll go through and look at it a little more slowly and see if there's something more there. I think possibly tomorrow you guys are going to have a tip that talks about a vision I had while riding NTI, and it's the vision of being Jesus on the cross during the crucifixion. And in this vision, I was fully enlightened. And so I saw from that perspective. And it's very difficult to describe, but I do my best in tomorrow's, I think it's tomorrow's tip. It's either tomorrow or the day after. And you'll get to see it then. But one of the things that I mention in that tip is that there was no thought of me or I, but there was also no thought of not me or not I. Neither was there. There was no concepts at all. In fact, we've often heard Ramana Maharshi describe it as the concept-free state of mind. You know, when you have a coin in your hand, one side is heads and the other side is tails. You have heads and tails. But if there's no coin, you don't have heads or tails. Right? You don't have either. So when we wake up from concepts, wake up from ideas, and remember, ideas are a part of the script, a part of the code. So when you wake up beyond the code, you wake up beyond ideas, right? When you wake up beyond ideas, it's like having no coin. You don't have heads, but you also don't have tails. So there's no idea of I, but there's equally no idea of not I. It doesn't exist. You know, if this is difficult to understand, you might think of a newborn baby. Right? Do you think the newborn baby has the thought, oh, look, I'm not a person yet. Oh, look, I'm not an I yet. Of course not. Right? Oh, look, I haven't developed thoughts yet. No, of course not. It doesn't have enough concept to have what I'll call the anti-concept, the other side of the coin, right? It doesn't have enough concept to have the anti-concept. You have to have the concept to have the anti-concept. So when you awaken beyond duality, awaken beyond the code, awaken to the absolute, there's no thought of I, but there is equally no thought of not I. So the question again is, as the true self is existence and consciousness, what is the reason for describing it as different from the existent and the non-existent? Because teachers will often say the absolute is beyond existence and non-existence. Right? It's beyond being and non-being, which it is, because there's no coin at all. There's no concept at all. Right? It's beyond both. So the question is, what is the reason for describing it as different from the existent and the non-existent, the sentient and the insentient, right? And again, Ramana Maharshi answers, although the true self is real, as it comprises everything. I'm going to pause right there for a moment. Because one of the things that we've done recently with gentle healing is those exercises with imaginary Play-Doh, right? And you guys did the exercise not too long ago where we created Jesus, a figure of Jesus out of the Play-Doh. And then after you created Jesus, I asked you to, look at your little figure of Jesus, but notice that it was still Play-Doh, right? Notice it's still the same color Play-Doh as you started with. It still has the same smell. Pinch it. Notice it's still malleable. It's still Play-Doh. And then I asked you to destroy Jesus. Kathy had a green Jesus. I had a red Jesus. I had red Play-Doh for some reason. Destroy Jesus, right? And notice you still have Play-Doh. Well, if we look at the Play-Doh itself, does the Play-Doh itself have the idea, I am Jesus, I am not Jesus? No. It doesn't have such ideas, right? It is simply Play-Doh. But was Jesus formed out of the Play-Doh? Yes. And was the end of Jesus, did that happen out of Play-Doh, right? When you destroyed Jesus, did that happen out of Play-Doh? Yes. So even though Jesus was comprised of Play-Doh, and the destruction of Jesus was a happening of Play-Doh. It comprised both the birth and the death and the life of a Jesus. In the Play-Doh itself, there is no thought of a Jesus and no thought of no Jesus. That really is another analogy to what's happening here. So Ramana Maharshi says, although the true self is real, as it comprises everything, just like the Play-Doh comprised everything, right? Although the true self is real, as it comprises everything, it does not give room for questions involving duality. Right? The Play-Doh doesn't think, oh, am I a Jesus now? Oh, am I not a Jesus now? Right? The Play-Doh isn't thinking. Although the true self is real, as it comprises everything, it does not give room for questions involving duality about its reality or unreality. You know, Plato doesn't think, am I real or am I unreal? Am I illusory or am I truth? Am I being or am I non-being? Am I existence or am I non-existence? None of that thinking is there. That thinking is all at the level of code, script, karma. That thinking, thought, remember, thought is the primary way we experience the code. That thinking is within the realm of code. From the perspective of the absolute, which is, you know, using the symbols of in and out, from the outside looking in, right? From the outside, those ideas don't exist. And this is why you'll often hear, you know, people saying that awakeness will not say, I am awake. Now, it's kind of funny because I think that's rather paradoxical, because I think sometimes the body will make that statement. We can find Nisargadatta making that kind of statement a lot. But it's just the happening that is occurring because of those of us who are still within the code, still within the karma, desiring a communication that will help us to continue to rise in vibration and then awaken. Because of our desire, this type of communication comes through the body of the awakened guru because we need it. But at the same time, no such concept exists in the absolute. Okay, my phone wants me to get ready to listen to Jacqueline, so I'll do that. But I still have 15 more minutes of my own time. Let me just turn I usually have my phone turned off when I teach, but last night I didn't, and today I don't. So although the self is real, as it comprises everything, it does not give room for questions involving duality about its reality or unreality. Therefore, it is said to be different from real and unreal. You know what? In other words, what we're trying to describe when we say it's beyond reality and unreality, we're trying to describe that it doesn't have the concept of reality or unreality in it. When we say it's beyond existence and non-existence, we're trying to describe that it doesn't have the concept of existence and it doesn't have the concept of non-existence. When we say it's beyond being and non-being, we're trying to describe that it doesn't have the concept of being and it doesn't have the concept of non-being. It doesn't have any of that in it. It's beyond all concepts. It's concept-free. Although the self is real as it comprises everything, it does not give room for questions involving duality about its reality or unreality. Therefore, it is said to be different from the real and the unreal. Similarly, even though it is consciousness, since there is nothing for it to know or to make itself known to. Now, let me pause there for a moment, because we talk about the first principle of God and the second principle of God. And the second principle of God is consciousness. And 2 weeks ago, Ramana Maharshi was very clear with us that consciousness is impure, meaning it's not the absolute. And now Ramana Maharshi is saying, similarly, even though it is consciousness. So, you know, is he contradicting himself? No. He's not, and let me see if I can explain why. Plato, we have said, represents consciousness. Plato is made up of something. I don't know what. I wish I had a can of Plato. I would grab it and read the ingredients to you. fact, maybe I can find out. We have time. Let me go to the internet. Let's see what Plato is made out of. Okay, here we go. What is Plato made from? And the first link I answered isn't going to answer. It's Hasbro, and they're just advertising Play-Doh. Okay, here we go. Let's try this one. The name of this website is howtoadult.com. The popular molding material is a childhood favorite because of its imaginative possibilities, blah, 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 blah. But what exactly is it made from? It is composed of water, salt, and wheat flour. There we go. It also has borax in it to keep away the mold and petroleum to add the smoothness. So, Play-Doh is made from water, salt, wheat flour primarily, and then it has some petroleum and some borax in it. There we go. This is why we don't want our kids eating Play-Doh, right? So, let's just pick one of these to make this conversation simpler. Or two of them, water and flour. Okay, we'll pick water and flour. So let's say that the water and flour represent the absolute. Then I can say that the water and flour is the Play-Doh. Right? Similar, even though the self, even though the absolute is consciousness, similarly, even though the water and the flower is the Play-Doh, right? So it's kind of like saying, even though Play-Doh is consciousness, there's actually something below, beyond Play-Doh, that is also what the Play-Doh is. What's beyond the Play-Doh is the water and flower, and yet it's what the Play-Doh is. When you're looking at the Play-Doh, right, you're still looking at something that is made. You're looking at consciousness. Consciousness is one step away from the absolute, which is why we say it's impure. So Ramana Maharshi says, similarly, even though it is consciousness, since there is nothing for it to know or to make itself known to. Now, that's what makes the absolute different than consciousness, right there. That part of the sentence. Since there is nothing for it to know or make itself known to. So even though it's the same as consciousness, because it is the water and flour that makes the Play-Doh, so in that way it's the same as consciousness, it's different than consciousness, too. Because consciousness is the first level of subject. Consciousness is the first level of I. We can even go so far as to say that consciousness is the first level of ego. I've called it before divine ego, and I heard Bentinho Massaro call it God's ego, which personifies it a little bit. But consciousness, and Ramana Maharshi called it impure. Consciousness is the first level of I. And as such, consciousness has in it the ability to witness. The second principle of God has the ability to witness. And it's that ability to witness that created the third principle of God. And it's the third principle of God that created manifestation, which gives you something to witness, right? But in the first principle of God, the subject does not exist. In the first principle of God, the ability to witness does not exist. It's awareness without awareness of. That's the difference between the absolute and consciousness. So even though on the one hand they're the same, on the one hand the consciousness is made up of the absolute, just like Play-Doh is made up of flour and water, there's still a difference between the two. In the absolute, there's awareness without awareness of. In consciousness, there's the ability to have awareness of. So since in the absolute, there's no awareness of, Ramana Maharshi, listen to this sentence, says, similarly, even though it is consciousness, since there is nothing for it to know or to make itself known to, because there's no awareness of, right, it is said to be different from sentient and insentient, or it is said to be different from being and non-being. And that is the end of the experience section. And I'm not going to start the attainment section. I will save that for April 1st, which also happens to be Easter. Easter and April Fool's Day, all in one. And the first time the guiding light is taught on Sunday night at 7 p.m. Eastern time. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do something that I just want to do. Last night, if you're at Gentle Healing, I played this, or actually Ken played, this really great version of the Garden of Gethsemane with Ted Neely. It was his farewell tour. And it was kind of funny watching it because he looks way too old to play Jesus, because you know, Jesus was a young man. But anyway, although they say he was sick that night and they say his voice was not good that night, I actually think this is the best I've ever heard him sing Gethsemane. And I had said I wanted to hear it again, and we have a little bit of time here, 6 minutes, and it's just a little over 6 minutes long. So I'm going to shut up, and let's listen to Ted Neely.
Will no one stay awake with me? Peter, John, James, will none of you wait with me? Peter, John, James, I only want to say, if there is a way, take this cup away from me, for I don't want to taste its poison, feel it burn me. I have changed, I'm not as sure as when we started. Then I was inspired. Now I'm sad and tired. Listen, surely I've exceeded expectation. I've tried for 3 years, seems like 30. Could you ask as much from any other man? But if I die, see the saga through and do the things you ask of me. Let them hate me, hit me, hurt me, nail me to their tree. Want to know my God, want to know my God, want to see my God, want to see my God. Why I should die? Would I be more noticed than I ever was before? Would the things I've said and done matter anymore? I have to know my Lord, have to know my Lord, have to see my Lord, have to see my Lord. If I die, what will be my reward? If I die, what will be my reward? Have to know my Lord, have to know my Lord.
I've tried for 3 years, seems like 90. Why then am I scared to finish what I started? When you started, I didn't start. God, thy will is hard, but you hold every card. I will drink your cup of poison, nail me to your cross and break me, bleed me, beat me, kill me, take me now.
Last night I had the same feeling I do now, just like, wow. Wow, 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 wow. Okay, and with that, I am releasing the mic.